Little over two decades ago, I picked up a novel by Scott Turow called Presumed Innocent. Took it with me when I went away on vacation and could not put the book down. From the moment I started reading it, I was sucked into the world of prosecutor Rusty Sabich, who was accused of killing a fellow prosecutor who was also his mistress in that office. And the people surrounding the case were very well written, very well drawn, characters so good that they later were turned into a major motion picture starring Harrison Ford and Raul Julia and Brian Dennehy and many others. That book, Presumed Innocent, was written by my guest today, Scott Turow, who now, more than two decades later, has come out with a sequel simply called Innocent. Last weekend, I was going on a trip, and a friend of mine told me, hey, do you know that Scott's written a sequel to that? I said, well, I'm getting a copy of that right away, and I did. Went away on vacation for a few days last weekend, and again, couldn't put the book down. Scott, you've done it again. Congratulations, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Paul. It's good to speak with you again.
Why did you decide to write the sequel?
Well, I think the more relevant question with me is why did you decide for so many years not to write a sequel?
Okay.
There were really two reasons. And given the, to me, incredible success of Presumed Innocent, there was sort of a clamor to do it again immediately. I felt two things. One, I'd waited a long time to get a novel published, and I thought if I just went and wrote another Rusty Sabich book, I would sort of have built myself into a telephone booth as a writer from which I would really never escape. I wanted to do different things. And the other is that, you know, in whatever little way, Presumed Innocent was some kind of path-breaking book. And, if the novelty was part of the attraction, then, you know, you can't be novel twice. And I thought I'd be competing with myself, and I didn't want to do it. But, you know, 20 years later, I found Rusty Sabich preoccupying me. And I certainly had always known, I always knew where he was, because he had been written into drafts of earlier novels and then removed. So I knew what was up with him, and then all of a sudden I really wanted to do it.
So was this something where you had written things for other Kindle County books that you'd written and said, oh, you know what, I'm going to take Rusty out of that because I don't want to confuse it. And then you said, oh, I'm going to go back and find those legal pads with those notes on them and bring them back and turn them into a real book.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Rusty, he was always in my mind. So when I wrote The Burden of Proof, which was my second novel that followed his defense lawyer, Sandy Stern. The first draft, Rusty had married Sandy Stern and his new wife, and my publisher, Raj Strauss, had said, oh, you know, that's just too Jane Austen. We don't want to bring Rusty back for a little cameo at the end.
Uh-huh.
Personal Injuries was another of my novels about another defense lawyer. He ended up on the appellate court, and in the early drafts, Rusty Sabich was mentioned again as the source of his appointment to the appellate court. And, I took that out again because it was just too damn long, that book. So, but I knew where Rusty was, and you read Limitations a few years ago, and,
yeah,
and Rusty appears as a minor character in that book. So I knew all about him. I knew what was up with him. I just hadn't really spent a lot of time fully imagining his life. But by the time I wrote Limitations, I was pretty serious about going back to Rusty. And indeed, Limitations started as an assignment from the New York Times. And in the first couple days I was conceiving of that book, I even thought that the main character would be Rusty instead of this other judge, Judge Mason. And George Mason, and I was dissuaded from that. But I had this post-it note sitting on my desk for weeks that said, "A man is sitting on a bed in which the dead body of a woman lies." And I didn't know what to make of that post-it note. And all of a sudden, I turned around one day and I said, "The man who's sitting on that bed is Rusty Sabich."
Ah, so you do have an aha moment
in this case, it was really an aha moment. And, you know, the sort of spine tingling and, you know, the electricity across the shoulders and what little hair I have left sort of standing on end. And I knew that was what I wanted to do. And, you know, of course, the inevitable question is, well, if that's Rusty Savage, who was the woman and how did she get dead? And I had a sort of moral intuition, given the ending of Presumed Innocent, that ought to be Rusty's wife from the first novel, Barbara Savage. But the more interesting question is, well, what were they doing together 20 years later?
Yeah.
And when I went back and reread the end of Presumed Innocent, I found that, in point of fact, Rusty says at the end of Presumed Innocent that although Barbara has moved to Detroit, he is visiting with her regularly, and he says that in a sort of halfway manner, they've already become reconciled. And when I thought about the idea of continuing a marriage in those circumstances, the sort of ultimate of the way people stay in bad relationships, you know, I really suddenly knew what I was going to be writing about. Knew intuitively, although it was pretty conscious in mind after that. Namely, why do some people continue to make the same mistakes in their lives?
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Scott Turow, whose book is called Innocent. It's a sequel to Presumed Innocent more than two decades later. Of course, became that major motion picture that I referred to with Harrison Ford as Rusty Savage. Did you like the movie?
Yeah, I liked the movie quite a bit. You know, Alan Pakula, who was the director, may he now rest in glorious peace, Alan was very kind to me, as was the producer, Sidney Pollack, also now of blessed memory. But they were both wonderful to me, and Harrison Ford was terrific. And Brian Dennehy, you know, became a lasting friend. I just spoke to Brian the other day. So it was a very good experience for me in terms of the creative relationships. And I liked the movie a lot. It was, you know, it was very faithful to my novel. And, you know, if I was the director, I would have done some things a little bit differently. But, you know, pretty much Alan followed my vision, including in the look of the movie and... So I was very pleased with the movie and, of course, delighted with its, you know, with its great success.
And has the new one, has Innocent been sold as a movie? Is there a script worked up yet?
No, it hasn't been sold. There have been, we're now on our fourth serious conversation about this. It's been ready to be bought three times previously, and studio executives at the top have sort of been scared about this is another courtroom novel, and I think the predominant view is that the courtroom is the province of television right now.
Mm.
You know, and the way things go in the film business, you know, that will be the view until somebody makes a courtroom movie that does real well, and then they're going to turn around and want to buy every courtroom novel in sight. So I do think Innocent's going to have its day as a movie. There's continuing interest in it. And, you know, sometimes in Hollywood, you just got to keep your powder dry instead of trying to force things to happen.
Well, you know, Harrison Ford is certainly still around. Bonnie Bedelia, who's Barbara Rusty's wife, is still around. Brian Dennehy, you'd have to write more Ray Horgan stuff because he's not really in the book all that much. Unfortunately, Raul Julia, who played Sandy Stern so brilliantly in the movie, not around anymore. You'd have to find somebody like that. And I was curious about this because as I was reading the book, I was hearing Raul Julia's voice in every Sandy Stern line that you wrote, and I wondered if you heard that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Stern has been among my characters the one who has appeared the most consistently. I don't think he has had, there's been a novel yet in which he has not made a brief appearance. So his voice has never really left me as a character. And I would say, you know, with all due respect, based on things that Raul said to me, that, you know, the voice you hear is really Raul trying to duplicate the cadences of the character that I wrote. So the answer is, you're right. It is Raoul's voice, although Raoul would tell you that it was my voice to start.
So he's doing you, you're not doing him.
Yeah, that's a short way of saying what I was trying to say more delicately.
I got to take a break. We'll come back with more with Scott Turow, whose new novel is called Innocent. It's his first novel in years, and it's the first sequel he's written to Presumed Innocent. I say first, hoping that there will someday perhaps be another one without me having to wait another 20-plus years. But in the meantime, this is a terrific read, and we'll talk more about it when we come back here. I'm Paul Harris. This is The McGraw Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Talking with Scott Turow, the attorney and novelist, whose new book is called Innocent. It is a sequel to Presumed Innocent. Takes you back into the world of Rusty Sabich and his wife Barbara Sabich and the prosecutor Tommy Molto. And we were talking about the actors who appeared in the movie who are still around. Let's also mention Joe Grafasi, who played Tommy Molto in the movie of Presumed Innocent, and supposedly could play him that role again if you know this does become a major motion picture as a sequel as well.
Well, you know, I saw Joe within the last 6 months. He and Brian Dennehy performed Huey by Eugene O'Neill here at the Goodman Theater.
Uh-huh.
And so, as I said earlier, Brian remains a good friend. And so we all went out and had a beverage together afterwards. And, you know, Joe really makes that play, which supposedly is headed for Broadway's. So people in Manhattan will have the chance to enjoy a really memorable performance. But Joe is just a great actor, and he was, of course, ecstatic to hear that that Tommy Molto had crawled out of the coffin.
You have spent a lot of time in courtrooms yourself, both as a prosecutor, as an assistant U.S. attorney, and now as a criminal defense attorney with the firm of SNR Denton. How many of the characters that you write in this or your other books are based on people and incidents that you encountered in real life?
You know, there's very, very little one-for-one correspondence. You know, there was one colorful courthouse character whom I really couldn't resist sticking in one of my earlier novels, a sort of gangster slash lawyer, if you can imagine such. And but most of my characters are sort of, you know, drawn from my imagination as informed by the life that I've led.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, very few people are going, you know, oh, that's me in that book.
And as a lawyer, you probably do that on purpose.
Well, I do, although, you know, it's interesting. I've watched those laws change, and you can, as long as it's clearly a novel, you can pretty much do whatever you want. You know, somebody could write me into a novel tomorrow and, you know, describe me as a character with horns and, you know, have all kinds of moral faults and probably get away with it legally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that certainly wasn't the case when I came out of law school, and I guess you're right that caution has made me reluctant to do it. But I really think more of it's a sort of artistic thing, Paul, because once you're writing about somebody who's really there, there are things you don't know about the inner life of that person. And so it's much, I think, richer to imagine a character from the inside out, to sort of know his or her heart, to start. And you know, that's why we really read novels, is to find out those things about the people that we sort of meet in life, to fill in the blank that we all experience in trying to imagine what it's like to be somebody else.
You also don't use real places. This, like the first movie, the first book, Presumed Innocent, and in fact, I think it's your eighth novel that is set in fictional Kendall County.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you use real places?
Well, that that's a little trickier question. Kendall County arose while I was writing Presumed Innocent because I based Presumed Innocent very loosely on things I'd observed while I was working in the DA's office in Boston in my last year in law school. And I thought originally that I was writing about Boston, but I don't keep a journal. And so as things happen to me in real life, I tend to pump them into the novel that I'm writing. And, of course, I was a prosecutor for 8 years in Chicago, and during that time I'm importing various details of my daily life into the novel I was working on. And Boston slowly began to look a lot more like Chicago, and I realized, well, this isn't a place that's recognizable as either, so I better call it something else. And that's how Kendall County was born. Well, once I decided that my second novel was going to be about Rusty's defense lawyer, whom I'd already said, you know, was a creature of Kendall County, then I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these novels have tended to tie together in the sense that they take characters from earlier books who were in the background, and my novels then tend to bring them into the foreground. So, you know, I have ended up sort of living imaginatively in Kendall County. You know, I you're right, I have followed that. I've followed that pattern, like The Laws of Our Fathers, which is set in part in California. There's a town that I imagine there that's half Berkeley and half Palo Alto.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess part of it is I have such a lousy sense of direction that, you know, if I was writing about a real place like Chicago, where I've lived the great bulk of my life, I can never remember whether Adams and Jackson run east or west. So I'd spend all my time trying to, you know, recall the real details rather than just being able to make it up as I go.
All right. So then this is the logical next question. Since you invented Kendall County,
mm-hmm.
have you sued Amazon for using the Kindle name?
No, I have not. And, of course, that's not I wouldn't mind, you know, if they would, you know, if they would say with every Kindle sold, this name is borrowed from, you know, Scott Turow's wonderful novels, and name a few,
yeah.
Or give them away as a bonus with every Kindle.
No, but you don't want to give them away. You want to sell.
Well, yeah, no, they can buy them from me and then give them away as a premium. That would work out ideally. But, no, I don't, you know, I don't know the full provenance of the name Kindle. I'm told that the person in charge comes from Chicago, you know, Amazon's official line is that it's, you know, just based on, you know, the idea of creating fire or kindling interest.
Yeah. Well, Innocent is a terrific sequel to Presumed Innocent and another in a long line of terrific novels by Scott Turow. It is in bookstores and on Amazon and every other e-website
right.
Now. And it's always a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on the book, and thanks for your time today.
Paul, thanks for having me on very much. It's really always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Scott Turow here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.